Now we are in the discussion part of Lesson 14. Beyond the known universe exists space so grand and inclusive that it boggles the thought. Space is endless and yet existenceless. Imagination takes flight and creativity continues. Wonderful, isn't it? Who is in charge of my inner genius? Who is in charge of my inner imagination? Who is it who is going to bring peace on earth? Who is it who's going to let all the earth be at peace? What was the name given to Jesus? Well, you may have lots of names, and I'll help you start. The Prince of...
Peace.
The Prince of Peace. Isn't that what they called him? They called him the Prince of Peace.
Yes.
They called him the one who sought to have peace on earth. The one who taught peace on earth. The one who shared peace on earth with all the people. It was his concept for them. Let him who is without sin cast the first stone. Let the little children come unto me, for such is the kingdom of God. Such is the kingdom of heaven. Now, what did he mean about that? What did the little children do when they came to Jesus? Did they want to be healed?
No.
What did they do? They made a mess of themselves. They crawled all over him. They cuddled in his arms. They sat in his robe, and they went fast asleep. I mean, use him as a bed. Very inconsiderate. Very inconsiderate. Did he care?
No.
What did he say? The disciples wanted to chase him away, and he said, knock it off. You guys should be so good students as these little children are. So attentive, so open, so listening to what I have to share with you. He said, all the world may know peace when all the world turns within and finds where peace abides. Go to the Father within, who seeth in secret, and the Father will reward you openly. All that we've heard from our biblical scholars, not biblical scholars, but I mean like Jesus and like others, is peace. What did the Buddha do? The Buddha was a big joke, you know. The Buddha was from a very wealthy family, and the Buddha had everything. He had a wife and children, he had everything. But his father had tried to protect him. His father tried to protect him from knowing about death, knowing about illness, knowing about lack, knowing about these things. And when he heard about it, he said, hey, that's not too cool. I must understand this. And so he left his father's home. He left his father's kingdom where he was in line to be the king. And he went out and he gathered around him other people who were searching their path, each separately on their own way, not knowing what the other was searching for. None of them were Hindus, none of them were Brahmins, none of them were Christians, none of them were anything that we know about. They were just kids out searching for the meaning of life. And they felt flagellating themselves and hitting themselves with sticks and stuff was going to do a lot for them. And he went along with it because he didn't know any better. And then finally, he found a place. He found a place where he could be at peace. And he went into this boa tree, a lovely big tree in India that just grows and grows and grows with all the side growth going in. And he nestled in the arms of the boa tree, much like the children nestled in the arms of Jesus. And as he nestled in the arms of the boa tree, he was lulled into a sleep. He was lulled into a feeling of peace, a feeling of goodness. And as he was lulled into this feeling of goodness and peace and sleep, all of his tranquility stayed with him, and all of his difficulty left him. All the anxiety that he had left him, and he was free. Free of all anxiety, free of all concern. He was peaceful. He was one. And then what did he do? He woke up from his peacefulness a new man. He woke up from his peacefulness with a whole new attitude toward life. He was like the young man who helped the rich man in the middle of the flood get their car going. Now, okay, what took place in him? What happened to him when he went back to his friends? He said to his friends, "Hey, I think we got this all wrong. I think we got this all wrong. Our purpose in life is to be ourselves and have fun." And his friend said, "Oh my goodness sakes, what happened to this guy? He lost his way." And then the Buddha said, "There's only one thing for us to do. We've been starving ourselves for years and flagellating ourselves for years and denying ourselves for years. So now, what are you going to do?" What did he do?
He went to eat.
He said, let's party. You know what that means? Have you ever had a let's party experience? Kind of nice. Let's party. Let's go and eat. Let's go and enjoy ourselves. Be ourselves and have fun. And his associates looked at him and said, "You are too much." And they went with him, but they didn't eat. They didn't party. They didn't know how to do that. They didn't know how to go through that experience, and so they went away from him. And he carried on by himself, and he taught this peace that he had found. He taught this oneness that he found of not manipulative, not being controlled of any other person or any other thing in life, but just being relaxed and peaceful. Just being relaxed and peaceful. And as he taught that, as he shared that, the rich people of that area came to him and said, "We like what you teach. Your teaching is very much harmonious with ours. Eat, drink, and be merry, and have a good time. Enjoy life." Now, they didn't understand everything he was doing, but they liked the direction he was going. They felt it was a lot better than the Brahmin teachings and the teachings of the Hindus and the teachings where they was teaching of denial. And so, just by one man making one change in his thought and his life, his charisma carried into power a philosophy that changed the world. And his philosophy was, be yourself and have fun. And his philosophy was, have a good time. His philosophy was, do what you feel is right inside of you. And students came to him and wanted to study under him. And he says, "Fine, study under me. Go ahead. Here's what I do. I look at this flower, and I let the flower talk to me, and the flower says, 'Buddha, you're a cool guy. You're doing it right. Buddha, you're doing it right. Buddha, you're doing it right.'" And this was the concept he had for himself as he went on. And one woman who had a large amount of property there said to him, "You should have a place where you can settle down, and the closer to me, the better." And so he settled down, and he had Deer Park in India, a tremendous park, a tremendous many, many square miles of property. And there he lived with those who wanted to follow him and do what he did. And the teaching of the Buddha comes to us today as a big joke. And I say a big joke, not unkindly. But what happened to Jesus? Jesus was a Jew, and the Jews tried to kill him, and they put him out of business. But they didn't put him out of business, they put him in business because they made a martyr out of him. The Buddha, they all tried to destroy his popularity because people came to him and said, "We like what you teach. You're a cool guy." But the Hindus were a little more businesslike than the Hebrews. And the Hindus went to Buddha and said, "Here, we love you. You are a wonderful Buddha. You are a wonderful Hindu. You really live what we teach. We ordain you as a Hindu sheikh, as a Hindu priest. We ordain you." And he didn't care. He didn't give it any thought. He never told the world he was ordained as a Hindu. But the Hindus told the world that he was ordained as a Hindu. "And I can ordain all of you and have you all be ministers of the United Church, of the all that stuff, ministers of God Unlimited. And you'll be ministers of God Unlimited. But you won't teach the ministry of God Unlimited because you don't even know you're ordained. Because I can ordain you." And that's the easiest thing in the world to do. That's what they did to Buddha. And that's what the Hindus did, and how they got their name to grow with the teaching of Buddha. Because the Buddha's teachings were so simple, so beautiful, so profound, so all-encompassing, that the people loved it. The people embraced it. And so they did with the teachings of Jesus. They embraced them because they were teachings of unconditional love. Okay. Now, did they teach peace on earth? Oh, yes. Did they teach peace on earth now? Oh, yes. Did they teach that everyone can enjoy peace on earth? Yes. Did they teach that all mankind is beautiful and good? Yes. Did they teach that the children are the way showers for all philosophies, showing them the way to their inner self? Yes. So, you see, their teachings were quite similar, but they came with different brands on them, different names on them, and the name did not mean anything. What Buddha taught was peace on earth. What Zarathustra taught was peace on earth. What Lao Tse taught was peace on earth. What all of the great Hindu Brahmist teachers from India, teachers from China, teachers from Japan, all the teachers everywhere who taught a philosophy, not a cult, who taught a philosophy, not a cult, taught peace on earth. Many religions you know of are a cult. They teach the worship of a man. They teach the worship of Buddha. They teach the worship of Jesus. They teach the worship of the founders of their organization. And they are a cult. And that's not a bad thing. It's just that they're a cult. And they teach their own limitation. The true follower of Jesus the Christ teaches an expansion of consciousness that knows no limit. It teaches the universality of God. That's where the Catholic Church got its name, the Universal Church. And that's where you and I get our understanding. We are universal in everything we do. Now, when we recognize that we're universal, then we recognize another point which is so tremendously important and yet so often ignored. And that is the teaching of there now is peace on earth. There now is peace on earth. This teaching has been lost and found and lost and found over the centuries. And it will continue to be lost and found because people will go from feeling good and enjoying prosperous life to feeling bad and enjoying the plagues and the problems, the arrows and slings and arrows of misfortune that Shakespeare wrote about. When people get into these breaches of truth, and the breach of truth is where you say there is not peace on earth. Truth teaches you there is peace on earth now. It is always here. It will always be here. and that peace on earth penetrates the entire earth. It is a balance in our ecology. It's a balance in our environment. It's a balance in everything. It's a balance in all that is. And I'm sharing it with you now, and in the process of sharing it with you, I make it sound just a little bit crazy sometimes, and you say, well, I think after Herb leaves, we'll go about our normal business and pay no more attention to what he had to say. And if that's what you do, that's fine. But if you are able to pick up the content, the direction that we are going here, would you like to live on the earth that is peaceful?
Yes, we live in.
Would you like to live where, remember the days, I do, remember the days when you went out to your car and you turned the key and drove away? The key was in the ignition. You never thought of taking the key out of the ignition. You never thought of locking your doors, any door, your front door, your back door. People did not intrude upon your privacy and who you are. Your own recognition of your, not right, but who you are, is respected 100%. Now, do you respect yourself?
Yes.
Do you respect your world?
Yes.
Do you respect all of life?
Yes.
Is all of life good and very good?
Yes.
Is there terror and unhappiness and madness on earth?
No.
Why do you say no?
There is divine order. And there is
because if I recognize madness, terror, and unhappiness on earth, I am that madness, terror, and unhappiness. It can be no other way. The world is a reflection of who I am, what I think, and how I respond. We're all responsible for who and what we are. Are you ready to take that responsibility?
Yes.
Are you ready to put it in motion for yourself? Wouldn't it be wonderful to walk down the street and have everyone say, good evening, how are you today? How nice to see you. Isn't it a one, not isn't it, get away from that phrase, isn't it a wonderful world? It is a wonderful world. It is a wonderful life we're living. It's nice to see you. I don't know who you are. I don't know anything about you. But I am nice, and I see you, therefore you are nice. You are my reflection of goodness, of beauty, of purity, of peace. And you see, when you are ready for that sort of a thing, what's going to happen to you? What gave Princess Di her hang-up? The first one, she tried to please the prince. She tried to please the prince and be a good wife and be a good princess and be honorable and be somebody that the prince would really respect and honor. And that's a good thing. And what happens when she does, when she did that? She ran into a problem. He didn't instantly do what she wanted done. She wanted him to respect her and love her, not to treat her like so much dust because she's a commoner, which he did. Now, so she went dieting herself, and she went doing all sorts of things, trying to get his attention and trying to... And at one point she just said, to hell with it. To hell with him. I'm going to enjoy myself. I am a princess, and I'm going to take on all of the role of the princess and go and do as I choose to be a princess. I'm a married woman now. I'm married to the prince, and we have roles to play, but we also have roles that we can be free of. And she went out, and she was a glorious lady. She was a beautiful lady, and she was doing very well. And then the devil came along and wanted to bargain with her and wanted to get her to do things. And the devil was called the media, the newspapers, the television. They were trying to take pictures of her living her life and saying that she was not a good wife and that she was not this and not that. And they chased her through France, remember? And as they chased her through France, her driver lost control and she was killed. Now, that didn't have to be. Why is it that such a warring situation took place for such a peaceful woman? Because she fought it. If she had just been her glorious, notable self, it would have never happened. But she ran. She ran because she was frightened. She ran because they said, if they find that they're going to make something out of this, even if it's nothing, and it was nothing. They're going to make something out of it. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And she listened to the world about her. And if she had not listened to the world about her, she would be with us today and be a glorious woman. But you see, you run in fright because someone says, the world is going to hell. The world has got problems. The world is not improving whatsoever. And everything is going bad. And you believe that. And because you believe that, you empower that. And because you empower that, you make the world into a shoddy place. However, if instead of doing that, you were to say, like the Buddha, hey, let's party. Let's enjoy ourselves. What do, again, Prince
Diana.
Harry,
okay, Kate.
William, Prince William, William and Kate, that couple, they are bicycling through the world, they are riding in royal coaches, they are doing everything beautiful, they're just being themselves and having fun. They are the prince and princess and they're just having a ball. They're doing all the good things that a prince and princess do. They don't have to put on a show negative-wise. They don't have to... They are the prince and princess, and they're having fun. You understand?
Yes.
Now, are you big enough to say you are God? Are you big enough to say that you are the creator of your world?
Yes.
Okay. If you are big enough to say you are God and you're the creator of your world, then let's have some creation going on here. The creation that we have going on, there is peace on earth right now, everywhere, with everybody, under every circumstance. All the world is balance and harmony. All the hurricanes are now balanced out. All the earthquakes are now balanced out. All the tidal waves are without tidal. All of the things that we call bad, all the volcanoes, all the fires and all the floods and all the pestilence and all the disease, we conquer them. We conquer the disease. We conquer the fire. We conquer the floods. We conquer all these things. But we don't want to do that. We do not want to have them in our life in the first place. You follow me? We don't want pestilence, fire, flood, earthquake. All these things, we don't want that in our life in the first place. How do we not have that in our life in the first place? Like Princess Kate and William, what did they do? They're being themselves. Now, is Prince William like his brother Prince Harry? No. Harry is an entirely different type of guy. Harry is the party guy, but Harry is the party guy with lots of girls. He just loves a good time, and he loves lots of girls. Prince William loved Kate for how many years? Between 7 and 12 years. They were dearest loved friends all that time, and then they finally decided to get married. Because they knew they really were enjoying each other's company and would have a good time in each other's company and just enjoy the same type of things, and they are. And they're happy. Can you be happy being God? Can you be happy being who you are? Can you be happy as the master of your world? You sure can.
Yes.
Do you want to be happy?
We are happy.
Okay. If you want to be happy, then let's start putting the causes in motion to bring it about. So, how do you put the causes in motion to bring about peace on earth where there are hurricanes and fires and floods and all that good stuff? How do you put peace on earth where those things exist? Anybody.
We speak our words. There now is peace on earth, and it began with me.
Yeah. We speak our word. There now is peace on earth, and it's done with me. But is that all that we do?
It's done.
It is done. Now, how do we make sure that the law understands that we mean earthquakes and floods and hurricanes and other things like that too?
Divine order.
Uh-huh. Everything is in divine order. Now, what does divine order mean to you? Anybody?
It's the orderliness of the universe.
I'm sorry?
The orderliness of the universe. The orderliness of the universe.
The organ, the balance of the universe?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's good. The balance of the universe. Now, what does the balance of the universe mean? Now, that's a good phrase for it, too. What does the balance of the universe mean? Anybody?
The balance of the universe is goodness everywhere.
Right order.
Harmony.
Harmony. Okay.
It's harmony.
Is there a place in the divine order for floods, hurricanes, anything like that? Is
no.
there a place for it?
No.
No. It does not belong in harmony, does it?
No.
Does it?
No.
Does it?
No.
Okay, well, say it loud. You said your point well. I thought you'd say that loud too. No. So, what is it that harmony is that is in our world? What is it that harmony is in our world? Peter.
Is our inner peace.
Peter, yeah, what?
Inner peace. Peace.
Peace, yeah, okay, peace. But what is harmony in our world?
Balance.
Balance. Anyone else? What is harmony in our world? As you said, divine order. Harmony in our world is divine order in every area. Harmony is divine order in every area. Harmony is divine order on the smallest to the grandest experience. And do you have the power to speak your word and say that?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you speak your word and say that?
Yes.
Good. Always?
Yes.
All right, fine. If you don't, you can still say you did it because you thought it. Okay, now, we speak our word and it is done.
Yes.
Now, there's nothing more to be done. We don't have to go out and change the ecology of the world. We don't have to go out and change the weather by sending airplanes up to seed the clouds and various other things to manipulate the world. We don't have to manipulate the world. What do we do?
See it done.
We put the cause in motion that we wish to have so that we will see it done. We put the cause in motion for the thing that has to be done to bring it about and see it done. Now, this is an every moment situation. I'm going to say this to you and take it how you wish. Each one of you has a little baby, and that little baby is the problem. That little baby is coughing and can't breathe right. So long as you are standing by the side of that little child with your hand on that little child saying, there, there, all is right, the child breathes comfortably. You take your hand away and the child does not breathe comfortably. You take your hand away and the child will surely die. But you keep your hand there, and the child will surely live. All their life, I got to keep my hand there? Don't be silly. You keep your hand there, and that child will live. You keep your hand there, and the principle will work. You keep the statement in your consciousness fresh, fresh, fresh. All is in harmony. All is in balance. All is in right order. You keep that fresh in your consciousness. Fresh with the baby that needs to have your attention to say it is in balance. And it is in balance. You have that privilege. But we don't take that privilege because we give up. We don't take that privilege because Too often we give up. Too often we give up. We're holding the rope. Our little boy fell into the well, and we've got a rope down there, and he steps into the bucket, and we start pulling him up. And then all of a sudden we get a terrible itch, and we got to stop and scratch that itch. And when we're scratching that itch, we forget all about the bucket, and it goes kapach, and the boy drowns. Can you afford to let anything disturb you when you are doing something exceedingly precious?
No.
You have to be so on top of what you're doing. And we can do that. We can be on top of what we're doing. Any question about anything we said here?
Yeah.
This?
Yes.
Okay. But I mean, any other? Any other?
Okay.
Well, this is a new thing. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Great. Okay. Super. She's given me a new list of all of your names so I can act intelligent. All right. Let's see. Okay. Ask the question. Does the known universe have an end? From lecture 14. Does the known universe have an end? The known universe has an end because it is known. If a universe is not known, it has no end. But anytime you give a name to something, you give a beginning and an end to it. When you give a name to your child, you give a beginning and an end to it. When you give a name to your marriage or to your relationships, all these temporary things, you have a beginning and an end. In truth, there is no end to anything. I said to you at one point, all matter goes into one pot. All matter goes into one segment. And if you want, you speak your word and you say, all is divine now, all is wonderful now, I am wonderful now. And then you pass away. But do you pass away? Does any universe pass away? Or does every universe have a spirit, an intelligence? Does every universe, every person have an immortality of it? Or is all universe flesh that is physical? Is all human flesh physical? If all human is flesh and physical, if all the universe is physical, then yes, it passes away, and it passes away very well. And it passes away never to be remembered. But when you have everything divine, which is what everything is, nothing passes away. Everything is immortal, living forever. Now, whether that answers your question or not, I'm not sure, but I think it turns toward it. Every universe is eternal because every universe is spiritual. Every universe is a divine coalition of beautiful people, beautiful beings, beautiful circumstances, of divine people, of ideal people. And ideal people are ideal and can never pass away. They can never be lost, and they never will be lost. You went to a funeral the other day, and the funeral said goodbye to some person, and you said goodbye to the person. And then after you left the funeral, you stopped thinking about the person. You started thinking about your life again and what goes on in your world. That person lost its what? Lost its immortality the minute you stopped thinking about it. Now, every time you think about that person, you enliven their immortality. And every time you stop thinking about it, you take away their immortality. They have immortality only as they are known in and through your thinking about them, or our thinking about them. How do we have people in our world, how do we have circumstances in our world that are immortal and do not need us to think about them to make them continuously living and being. That which is spirit, that which is divine, that which is ideal, lives forever, and you can never make it more, nor can you make it less. Ask yourself a question. Is a human being ideal? Then you say, okay, if a human being is ideal and a human being lives forever and do good stuff, is that table ideal? Is that the ideal table? Well, it's a table. It represents table. It's a unique table. There are not too many tables like that around. It's a very special table, and it is a table. Is it divine? Is it immortal? Well, somewhere its design exists. This copy of the ideal table is just a copy, and it can be taken apart and put together, all those sort of things. But the ideal table, the original pattern of a table, of this type of table, exists. And so long as the pattern exists, then the ideal of the table exists, and the table has immortality. When the pattern of the ideal table is burned or lost or whatever, the table, when it's destroyed, is no longer anything in our life. It does not exist. Now you say, I know a time that it might exist. I knew that table, and I'm going to redesign and recreate that table. And I say, beautiful. But you are now creating a new ideal for that table. Because what you are doing, you are leaving off or putting on aspects of the table that the table did not have. And as you do that, you are not making the original design, the original integrity of it. It's a new original integrity of a new table, which has eternality to it as long as you are around to give it that eternality. It's kind of fun to talk about physical objects and ideals, because we want to put that ideal in a certain way that it can be lost or destroyed. And nothing can be lost or destroyed, because all these things are ideas. They're ideals. All these things are things that we build our life on. Now, okay, talks about this table here, and what about talking about this table in the kitchen? What is the table in the kitchen? Thank you. And how does the table in the kitchen function? Did you have anything to do with that table? Did you have anything to do with those chairs in the kitchen?
Yes.
Here?
Yes.
All right, say that. Okay. So he had something to do with those
it's
chairs. And
a purpose.
I'm sorry?
It's serving a purpose in the kitchen. It serves a purpose in the kitchen. The table in the kitchen serves a purpose.
It's useful in the kitchen.
Useful. Oh, we're not talking. A chair is a chair is a chair. You made it, and it's there. Whatever they do with it, that's their business, not yours. And if they use it to turn upside down and chop it up and make firewood out of it, that's their business too. Of course, you don't create it for that being done. You create it for them to enjoy it. And are they enjoying it? Yes. Okay, now, as long as you are alive, that table, that chair has immortality.
Yes.
And as long as you see that table, now, you can take a picture of that table. You can take a drawing of that table, and you can put it in the pyramid. And the pyramid is not going to be open for another thousands of years. Then the table is in limbo until the pyramid is opened, unless the table remains in use until the pyramid is opened. Then the table has eternality because it exists. When the table ceases to exist, goes to dust or whatever, if the original plan still is there, the table will always be there. Now, I'm making this sort of round the barn thing here, primarily because it's a joke. The table will always exist, because the table is a concept And that concept exists whether you have it, I have it, whether it's in the vault or whether the table stands. That table exists. Okay?
Yes.
No, and I'm not saying, okay, ask you to respond. I'm saying, okay, look. If you take a photograph of that table and you run off 1,000 copies of that photograph and send it as a piece of art to various places in the world, especially to museums that like to keep it a long time, will that table have its life existence continued? When does existence cease for man? When does existence cease for humanity, for objects? When does existence cease for anything?
When you stop remembering it.
When it stops being made?
When you stop remembering the thing.
When the thought of it is no longer...
When you no longer think about it.
When you no longer think about it. True. It ceases to be, it ceases to exist.
Yes.
Now, is that true? Is a thought ever created or destroyed? Is a thought ever lost in the allness of everything? Is the dictionary, is the library of the universe at Alexandria, or is the library of the universe in the allness of the universe? Is there anything in the universe where anything could be lost or forgotten or ignored? No, there's nothing. It's all going to be eternal.
Yes.
So we cannot say, as we like to try to say, that when someone dies or something is destroyed and no longer available, that it no longer exists. Well, that's not true. That person will always be, because that person held a place in the eternality of all, in the nowness of all. And the object also retains a place in the eternality of all. It's quite fascinating and quite charming. But I'm saying these things to you not to make you in any way misunderstanding it. I'm saying it merely to show you we argue, discuss, and think about a lot of things that we really should not bother ourselves with. It is better to give our attention to something like saying, there now is peace on earth, and it began with me. It is better to give our attention to something like, right now, all the world flows in harmony with its dynamic divine pattern. What is the dynamic divine pattern of the world? It's no earthquakes, no floods. I don't want to say no. It's harmony. And smoothness and goodness. You see, not that, it's this. But it's sort of hard to talk about something without saying the negatives. But we want to train ourselves not to say the negatives. We don't need to talk about the bad. We empower it. We talk about the good, we empower it. And if we talk about the bad, we're going to empower it. And the bad could be considered the hurricanes, floods, and all that stuff. And the more we talk about them, the more we empower them to exist, and the more we look around. And what is it that many people like to say? If there's one airplane crash, there's going to be two more. There's always three airplane crashes, right? No! But that's what we like to say. We like to say there's going to be three crashes. And that's so silly. And it is something we do. We put that power in motion, and it's so silly. Well, let's take a look at these other questions that are standing here. Yes?
We're going to 15 now. It's 4 o'clock.
We're going to do what?
To lecture 15. It's time for lecture 15.
It's time for the one-on-one.
Lecture 15. It's 4 o'clock now. So the questions will come after the lecture.
All of you have so many interesting thoughts and questions and ideas. It's so hard to ignore you and let you do something that you should be doing. Okay, now we took 15 would come at what, 4?
Now.
Now.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah?
Now.
Okay. Okay, now are you ready to keep sitting?
Yes.
Or you want to get up from?
Five minutes?
Yes. Okay, the boss says you got 5 minutes. So that means about 10 after. Okay? I'm enjoying myself, and I know you are too.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Then we'll get on there with number 15. Okay.